Oh. You're listening to Kevin and the Spleen.
No one's gonna ever love me.
1098.5 Radio QWX. Real quick.
Bussin', no cap.
No cap.
Really smack you in the ass with flavor. There you go. This show is about depression, anxiety, PTSD, and chronic illness.
We going quick. We're trying to keep you on the path to the ride home on the evening time.
It's a fucking zoo.
Make it quicks. The Quicks Radio.
White lives do not matter.
Hey, kids, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready?
Remember when I did that? That's right, folks. It's That Happens, the only podcast that isn't even a podcast. It just is being podcast. But really what it is it's a streaming video series that takes place on shrobhomevideo.com, and it's formless and nameless, and it had a co-host named Jeff, and Jeff is gone. Well, in a sense, Jeff is actually here, but I'll get to that later. That's confusing to the audience who doesn't have the context to put that together. But the podcast, it doesn't exist, and it's fake, and it can be whatever I want. So right now it's being an anime podcast, and I'd call it by name if I had one, but I don't. So here it is. I like anime. I like talking about it. There's no one to talk about anime with because anime is embarrassing. But I don't know. It's interesting. I think the West doesn't understand animation, and it tries to put it in little boxes. It's very diminishing and derivative and insulting to the format. And it's interesting to see different cultures take on the medium. And so I'm interested in exploring that, and maybe we'll do that. Or maybe we'll go back to the normal format, because as Kevin wisely said before we went to air, it's 75 long minutes, and we've only spent 7 or so of those. But without further ado, as I said before, Jeff is here with us and now has to deal with the expectations of...
That's right. I'm Jeff.
Exactly. Jeff is here. If you've listened to the podcast, you've heard on several occasions me mentioning my friend Jeff doing something where if you were thinking it was Jeff Davis I was talking about, you were probably confused or felt that might have been out of character for him, because I was talking about this Jeff right here, Jeff Ekman.
That's me.
Yeah,
I'm very different than Jeff Davis.
No, you're yeah. You know what the biggest difference is? You're here.
Well, that's a fair point.
It's all good. But Jeff is the host of No One Can Know About This. He hosts it with Ryan Kazmisky. We also write together, do stuff together, cook together. We've been having a lot of fun. And I have been. I actually was a guest on their podcast in episodes that aren't going to come out until the future. But thanks for coming on, Jeff.
Thank you. And thanks for coming on my show. I can't wait for those episodes to be airing, which will probably be in like a month or so. What's super fun about it is that you came over a year and a half ago and we recorded our Thanksgiving of 2022. Mm-hmm. And now we're editing those episodes and talking about that experience and stuff from the future, from now. And it's just surreal to like see such a long time go by and remember the details of a specific day from a year and a half ago.
Yeah. There's parts where I was like, yeah, I feel like I was, I remember chopping vegetables.
Yeah. And then there you are. You're chopping vegetables.
And I was like, oh, yeah. But it was very interesting. It's interesting to see this process. And man, I don't know. It's been fun doing it. If you check it out, it's a lot of fun. It's like watching the big game, except instead of the Super Bowl, it's Final Fantasy.
Yeah, exactly.
Does the big game play on Thanksgiving? No, right? There's some football.
The big game is on Thanksgiving. I know that. There's also a parade, but okay. The big game in our case was Chocobo Hot and Cold in Final Fantasy IX.
Yeah, man, Final Fantasy IX was really good. You know where Final Fantasy IX was made? Japan.
That's what an interesting place.
Yeah, but speaking of Japan starts with the letter J. which is preceded in the alphabet by the letter K, which is the first letter of Kevin, who's here today. Kevin, what's up? How's it going?
It's going pretty good. It's going really good. I'm looking forward to what we're talking about today before we get into it too much. But like, this has been an interesting little twist that I'm excited about tonight.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But before we go any further, we gotta tell you, Kevin, do you know what today is?
No. What is today?
I think it's Cinco de Mayo.
Oh, yes, it is Cinco de Mayo. Yes, it is.
No, it's the first week of Kevin May. That's right. An entire month devoted to Kevin. It's unclear what that means, but it's Kevin May. Okay. So now on to the podcast. Jeff, we'll start with you. Jeff, what's your experience with anime? When was your first anime? What was your first anime? Do you remember any of it? Like, what's the situation?
Overall, I hadn't really seen much except like an episode here or there of some random stuff that a friend was playing in college or something. But then it was maybe 6 or 7 years ago, I watched Death Note. And boy, was that an introduction to the anime universe. And I watched Death Note, and then I got really into Attack on Titan. And then I was like, man, anime is the coolest shit ever. It must all rule. And I watched Sword Art Online. And I got very excited at the beginning of Sword Art Online. And then partway through the first season, they abandoned their premise and they go in a completely different direction. And it was something I was not on board for. And I'm still mad at that show for what it did and did not do. Yeah. My dog.
I think the Zoom is doing a good job of crushing down that audio.
Oh, good. Good.
But I don't know. I think it's interesting. I think one of the reasons I want to do the podcast is to try and create sort of like a way to kind of ease people into anime. We kind of have to like figure out how to do that, but I would love to like figure out a way to kind of like get people a little bit, you know, into the understanding of everything. I don't know. Part of it is like, you know, most anime is based on mangas and stuff. And I wonder what Sword Art Online was manga wise, if they also kind of completely changed their premise, and if they did that, why or whatever. Because, you know, most anime is an adaptation. So when it gets adapted, like things change. And so you're always like, oh, I wonder if this is like an adaptation thing or, you know.
It clearly has multiple like series within it, because then there's like this Gun Gale Online and Alfheim and all this other game within the world, because that's an anime about a kid who has a VR game, and when he goes into the game, it's like a new RPG. He gets locked into the VR game and has to, they like a bunch of people have to beat this RPG, this MMO, before, or they'll die. Like if they die in the game, they die in real life. It's one of those. And then partway through, and this is spoilers for anybody who hasn't seen it, they just kind of abandon this and they let the kids out of the VR thing before they even beat the game. And then it's just a thing where like the kids can come in and out of the VR world and they're just playing it. And there's all sorts of weird stuff that I don't give a shit about happening. Mm-hmm. But they had like set up this clear thing where if you die in the game, you die in real life. There's like 100 floors to this insane MMO. And then it was like on floor 70, they like abandoned the whole thing. And I was like, we were going to build to stuff. And I thought that stuff that happened in the first episode was going to be paid off in these brilliant ways that I was building in my mind. And it just never did any of that stuff. And I thought that because Death Note and Attack on Titan, I think, really do those things where things are really just unbelievably built. And something that struck me about anime in general when I was watching that was like, this is beyond the unique animation styles, which is like a huge element of it. It felt like a storytelling sensibility of, it has an insane premise and it's going to nail that premise immediately without like worrying about, oh, does the audience need its handheld to get to this place? Or should we just fucking throw the throttle like what happens in Evangelion and just bam, we're going 100%. This is the premise. Like you can wrap your head around what's going on. And if you don't understand all of it, that's okay. It has a lot of confidence in drawing larger stories than a lot of American shows.
Yeah, confidence is, I think, a really good word, because like there's a lot of ways in which anime isn't afraid to be really obvious and stupid and like explain something really explicitly. And then there's a lot of ways where it's like, we're just going to be way too fucking complicated. This isn't going to make any fucking sense. And right. We'll move past it. And like, yeah, I think to do both of those things with it's like confidence is what it takes. But anyway, let's move on to Kevin. But Kevin, what's your anime kind of background? When's the first anime you've watched? What was it like? What's your experience?
Pretty much zero before this week. You know, like I said before, like I grew up in a really small town. I had interest in that sort of thing when I was like high school age, but there was just no, the library wouldn't stock stuff like this. The bookstores wouldn't sell stuff like that. You know, it was way too small of a conservative area to even come close to things like that. So I never really got into it during the age that I think most people do. And then, you know, didn't really look back until like I was kind of in my 30s, and I had a couple people try getting me into it, but like they would show me episode 530 of something and I would be so lost. I would just be like, yeah, this isn't for me. I have no idea what's going on, and never really gave anything a chance, you know, be it written, be it TV, movie, whatever. I just avoided the whole area. Up until this week, because Spencer was like, hey, would you watch this thing for me? And I was like, okay. And I did.
Yeah.
So that's my background, is like, I'm coming to this not knowing anything.
Well, I like that. I think that's a good perspective for me. So I think I'm pretty sure the first anime thing I ever saw was My Neighbor Totoro. I don't remember like the actual first time I saw it, but my understanding is we watched it on TV, or my parents somehow watched it on TV and just taped it, because we just had like a tape that was burnt off television. And it had like some, you know, errors in the middle of it. So it would like mess up for a while, you know, and we didn't know that was anime. It was just a videotape, you know, but it was really good. And it had, you know, Totoro in it, who's this big kind of furry monster. And I was like, oh, this is awesome, you know, and there's Cat Bus and the soot sprites and everything. It's just great. And so we just watched it a lot, and I was just like, this is a movie that no one knows about. And then there's another cartoon that I used to watch as a kid called Dragon Ball. And, you know, because back then you were like, that's a cartoon. Like, you don't think that's anime, but everybody fucking loved Dragon Ball. And then eventually Adult Swim and, you know, Toonami had anime. I think one of the earlier ones I watched was like Cowboy Bebop, but then there was like Tenchi Muyo. And from then I was kind of watching stuff online, going on to the internet and going on IRC and downloading stuff. You could like find chatbots that you could tell to download anime. It was like, it's kind of like, seeding torrents, except without like the whole torrent infrastructure almost. And so, yeah, I would watch a lot of anime, and, yeah, back then it wasn't very popular and there weren't a lot of people to talk to about it, even online, I felt. But you know, now it's like relatively popular. So that's my experience in general. I want to, like, what was the first? Yeah. I don't know like what the first anime like I watched on the computer was, but Lucky Star was a really early one. That's like a comedy, like school anime. Anyway, so yeah, I think it would be cool if we figure out a way to like get people kind of their beak wet into anime a little bit. And I think part of it is like anime is really inaccessible. And so hopefully we could go through in a way that's like it gets people into the idea. And I think Evangelion is a really good candidate for that, because it's insane in a lot of ways that are important to understand. And it's also not insane in a lot of ways that are important to maybe not also expose people to right off the bat. So, you know, I don't know, but feel free to follow along or not, or, you know, maybe we'll never do this again, but we're talking about Eva. I ask you guys to watch the first three episodes, but I don't know how, you know, how far we'll actually get through those. But we must have heard Eva. Kevin, you're more novice, so I guess let's start with you. But you've heard of Neon Genesis Evangelion. Can you tell us anything you heard or anything you know about it as someone who's not anime?
I mean, really, I just knew like some kind of like giant robots and monsters, and that was about it. Okay. That was the limit of it. I mean, like, I'd worked with people before who had like their offices completely decked out with characters from it before, so like I could roughly recognize a character from it, but not from having watched it. That was the limit of my knowledge of it before I started watching.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Jeff?
A few years ago, I think a bunch of these hit Netflix, including Garen Lagann, and I watched like the pilot to Garen Lagann in the first two episodes of this. And for whatever reason, I like wanted to keep watching this one a lot. I wanted to check them both out more, but just didn't wind up continuing, being like, at some point, I'm going to go way deep on Evangelion because I feel like it's got it. Because like those first two episodes, you can see the design, the vibe. It's awesome. And I wanted more of it. I just, for, you know, no good reason, didn't watch more of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I gotcha. For me, like, Evangelion was one I didn't watch until it was on Netflix. You heard about it. It was memed about. I've seen tons of stuff about it. Let's run through some of the memes. There's Gendo, who he has like glasses that sometimes glow, and so that was a big meme. There was in the movie, Shinji like masturbates, and like that was like a big meme for a long time. So it's just like a bunch of stuff like that. So I was aware of it, and it has this reputation as being really insane, like psychosexual anime or something, which I think back then it was kind of transgressive, but it's not, you know, it's not super extreme. It's just kind of, I don't know. I mean, it's super intense. It's just, it's more artistic than it is like, I don't know, you know, intentionally edgelordy or whatever. But so I just, because it was so popular, I just avoided it because I avoid popular things. And it's like, I get it. They fight and whatever. And he's a kid and everybody. The thing is, everybody hates the kid. Like everybody on the internet is like, oh, Shinji sucks and stuff. So, you know, I just avoided it. But when it was on Netflix, I went back and watched it. And it's like, oh, this is like the Stonehenge of anime. It's like the Stonehenge is like, Stonehenge wasn't the first thing. But like, man, isn't it there? And isn't it crazy? And isn't it important? You know, and it says a lot about ancient humans without being, you know, the first thing, you know, and it is very epic. I think it's like an emblematic of what anime is in a lot of ways. Like, you know, even very early on, they're talking about heady psychological concepts. And it's like, yeah, this is what anime is two people talking about philosophy and then killing each other. You know, it's kind of amazing. I don't know.
Well, doesn't Stonehenge have a bunch of religious imagery going on in it too?
Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, Stonehenge is also somehow tied to the Kabbalah, I think.
Yeah. Right.
The science works out on that.
So it's just like Evangelion.
Yeah, but okay, so we gotta talk about it. It's very popular, but when Netflix first bought it, I don't know, do you guys remember there was a like a controversy, like a popular controversy?
I missed this.
Okay, so there was this popular controversy that when Netflix first translated, where one of the characters' like lines got mistranslated. It's not relevant to what the episodes were covering, but everybody got so mad about the translation because they were like, it's homophobic or whatever. But apparently this week, they've somehow re-edited or something. They've changed Evangelion, and the fans are up in arms. So I actually have, Kevin, do you have a video of the, I think it's the opening sequence of Evangelion has been altered on Netflix. And so the fans are kind of up in arms about it. So we're going to play this.
Zankoku na tenshi nu yoru ni shonen yoshin wa ni na. が今胸のドアを叩いても私だけをただ見つめて微笑んでるあなた外触れるものを求めることに夢中で運命さえまだ知らない痛い気な瞳だけど いつか気づくでしょう その背中には遥か未来目指すための羽があること残酷な天使の夜に na ten chinu teze maro be kara yaga te tolmiras oto bashiru atsu ipanto sute omoide wo uru kiru nara kono sora wo daite kagayaku shounen yoshin wa ni nare.
So yeah, I mean, let us know what you think. If you think they should remove this and revert the changes.
How could they piss on the legacy like that? I can't believe it.
I don't know. I think, you know, if they want to move in a new direction, I think that's pretty interesting. Like, I don't know if we should be so. But, you know, you can check
fine,
out the video.
Docs the person who did that.
Yeah, I think we should get them. But thathappens.com if you want to see the video as opposed to just listen to the audio. But
you should. It's very fun.
It's great. Everybody loves it. We do good work here on the podcast. So yeah, thathappenspod.com, or also the anime podcast that we haven't figured out a name for, if we're going to keep doing pod.com. Either of those should work. But okay, so let's talk about it. The first episode, do you have any immediate thoughts? I don't know, big picture, little picture, anything.
I mean, every piece of design in this thing is amazing. Like, I'm constantly awed by every image throughout the entire episode, but I also love how it clearly starts at the middle of this thing. There's like so much history that's not being explained that I expect will be explained later in the show, but I felt like I completely understood what was happening, because what was happening was a kid was being called to enter a mech and save the world from a kaiju.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I noticed throughout this, and like maybe this is just something that I'm constantly on the lookout for in animes and different media that comes from Japan, is how much they're affected by the experience of the atomic bomb. And the parts in the classroom, and besides the fact that they use the imagery of like the shockwave hitting and all this different stuff that felt very much like the nuclear imagery.
Mm-hmm.
Losing my train of thought. I had something there.
Yeah. Well, were you thinking more about the teacher or the student?
Yeah. Because, yeah. It was the way that the teacher was presenting the events of 15 years ago, because it takes place in 2015, mm-hmm. indicating that 15 years earlier, there was this cataclysmic event. And they talk about like, and the people truly experienced hell that day. And I was like, this has got to be what it's like to be in a history class and hear about World War II.
Yeah.
In Japan.
I think it's so interesting. Obviously that's a big part of it. I think you see a lot of like Western missionary influences through Western culture and also like Western religion in the permeation there. But yeah, I think it's super interesting. I mean, they talk about the cataclysmic event. I think that's actually maybe episode 2 or something.
Oh, sorry.
But yeah,
those
that
two
event,
are so tied together. It was hard to.
Well, I mean, yeah, the whole anime is like, but that's what's so great. It's just one story and it just keeps going. It's so great. But yeah, like they talk about the second impact and they also talk about the third impact. But yeah, the second impact apparently happened in the year 2000. But, you know, just as like a plot summary, yeah, we see, you know, Shinji, who's the main character. He's a schoolboy and he's waiting for a ride from someone named Misato, and he's like looking, you know, he sees he has like a letter from her, not a letter, it's like a signed headshot of her, like a kind of sexy image of her that has like a lipstick kiss on it, and it's kind of like, it's kind of implied, it's almost like what do you call it, like a super bad situation or something, where it's like, oh, he's like, I'm going to try and get laid from this older lady. I don't know if that's an implication or what, but it's just like really weird how he has this photo as opposed to like a message. Obviously it's really, you know, illustrative to the audience, but it kind of sets up like what is even their relationship. And, you know, then the fucking angel attacks and everything goes apeshit. But yeah, I don't know. They set up that the angels can't be killed because something called an AT field. And then, man, okay. So they go to that underground place. That thing is huge. That's underground.
The scale that this show employs is one of the coolest thing about it.
Yeah. One of the things I think is really impressive is how they have these amazing evocative artworks that don't have a lot of movement, which is really interesting to track in anime, especially as someone who like has worked in production or whatever. But the amount of time they're spending animating, they save a lot of money on, but they can make really big pictures. So you have these big still images with little birds animated or something, you know, and they look gorgeous, but they don't necessarily take a lot of animation time to do. And Ava is like amazing in that sense, is like the way they spend their animation and money is like amazing. And then they don't like waste it in other places. They do a lot of long static shots and stuff. And that big opening scene that cuts open wide and shows it's called Nerve HQ, which is the government body that protects the world. That's this underground space, and it's like mostly a static shot, but it just looks amazing. It's this giant like underground bubble, and it's, I think they refer to it as something called a geofront or something, but I don't know. Basically, because of these impacts or something, angels are coming down and they're destroying the world, and nothing can kill them except apparently Shinji, right? Because he's a third children, according that's kind of how they set up that he matters. They set up that, oh, we need you for this, but they don't say you're gonna get into a robot. They go like, oh, he's the third children, then that's their way of saying it.
He's so, very much like the chosen one. Like his father's like, yeah, I'm hoping that he'll be good for this, and then luckily he is.
Yeah, and I'd say that aside from like the monsters and stuff, like this is very standard anime shit. Like nothing seems weird other than like I think Masato mentions Shinji's dad at some point, and he gets this face that's like as if someone mentioned the time like he murdered his brother or something. Like he has this really crazy reaction that kind of is like, oh, maybe shit is fucked up, because, you know, this anime has this reputation of being fucked up, but so far not that bad. You know, you get some cool action, but and then they introduce the Unit 01, and they're talking about the Unit 01 right as like the elevator is passing this giant humanoid like arm, and you're like, what the fuck is going on? They're underground in this giant bubble, and there's this unexplained massive giant arm just kind of reaching out of the ground, and it's images like these that like just like litter the whole fucking, you know, show or whatever. But then we see the Eva, which is the mecha, you know, it's a mecha anime, and it looks really cool. But they, you know, I don't know if you guys caught this, but they set up, they say, this is the artificial human Evangelion. They don't say this is a big robot. They don't say this is a mech suit. They don't say this is a sci-fi thing. They say it's an artificial human. And then you look at it as a giant robot. It's clearly not an artificial human. I don't know. Did you guys catch that?
Yeah, that kind of confused me, because later too, they talked about that, what was it, some augmented human thing. And I thought maybe they were trying to imply that the, you know, the Evas are somehow human at their core or something, which, right, you know, which seemed like they were hinting at that, but then kind of immediately took that back. But yeah, mm-hmm. I at first I thought that they were trying to say though that the robots were actually some kind of like evolved human that still needed like a normal human to pilot them.
Yeah. What about you, Jeff? Did you think anything of that?
Yeah. Well, I missed that specific statement, but I did feel like they wanted you to understand is that he's going to feel everything when he's in this robot. Like,
yeah,
it's going to be much more like becoming it than being safe in a little pod inside with some buttons and levers.
Yeah. One thing I really like about anime is the world building. I think it gets so much more in depth than most Western stuff, which kind of is almost just placeholder with names. It's just like, this is the MacGuffin. We call it the MacGuffin, and it's like, it's a MacGuffin. Whereas like in anime, it's like, here's the thing. There's something called an innate domain, and your innate domain can be simple. And then there's the hollow wicker basket technique, and that's a counter for a simple domain, except if you expand your innate domain that, and like all of that stuff is serious and real. And it's not just, here's a plot device we'll leverage. You know, it's like someone thought about all of these systems. And so Evangelion has that same stuff. And I think, you know, the artificial human, the third impact, the geofront, all this stuff, they call it the AT field, the LCL field. Here's a spoiler for you guys, but the AT field, I don't know if you know what it stands for, but it stands for absolute terror field. So that's fun.
I didn't guess that.
Yes. So at this point, you know, the angels attacking the city's getting fucked, and Shinji. Oh, so at this point, what is your opinion of Shinji?
Simple protagonist so far. I didn't have any negative feeling towards him, but it was just kind of like, this is our chosen one. He feels like very not ready to be the chosen one.
Yeah. See, I had a kind of hard time clocking why he didn't want to try the robot, just because I think you're obviously supposed to imply it's clearly going to be a very difficult task, and he understands how difficult it would be, and he doesn't think he could do it. But I feel like just a lot of people watch that, they go like, come on, get in the robot, right? Like, why would you not want to get in a robot? That seems like every child's dream.
I was trying to understand was like, what is his relationship to his father, and what does it mean that his father is asking him to do this? And as somebody who's seen enough anime to know how crazy shit gets, I was thinking, you know, this father's either the worst father of all time or the best father of all time, when I learn more context, you know?
Yeah, I can't remember if it was this episode or the next two, but definitely somewhere within these three episodes, they say like Shinji hasn't seen his father in 3 years. They don't live together. And based on Shinji's expression and stuff, you get the idea that he's somehow afraid of his father or uncomfortable around him or something. But then, you know, he's like getting the robot, and then Shinji's like, you don't care about me. You only asked me here because you want me to be in the robot. And right. So this kind of suggests like, oh, I feel like my dad doesn't love me and just uses me for stuff, which I get that being a bummer. But also it's like, well, this seems like a great opportunity to be like, hey, dad, I'm kicking ass, you know? And so like, it seems to me hard to just buy like, oh, I'm having such a hard time with it. But again, it's like, he is just a kid. And he could die, you know.
And I just chucked it up too to like, there's probably context here that they're yet to reveal, and they want me to be a little bit confused about that.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that leads to a lot of people like not liking Shinji and thinking, you know, he's terrible. But anyway, so I should mention at the very beginning of the series or the show, he sees just for a split second, you're not clear if it's a hallucination or what, but he sees a girl with blue hair, and that girl is Rei, but we don't know that yet. And later, or in this point, when the Eve is attacking and is not getting in the robot, they say, okay, go get the other pilot. And it turns out to be Rei. And Rei is super, super injured. She has bandages over her face and eyes and stuff, which is different than how she looked in the beginning sequence, which maybe it was real, maybe it wasn't. And then like an earthquake happens due to the angel attack, and Rei gets knocked out of her stretcher because she's that injured. And Shinji goes in, he picks her up, which is not, Jeff, you used to work in health. You don't just run to someone who's fallen, that's unknown, in unknown condition. You don't know their injuries. You don't just like pick them up roughly around their shoulders, right?
Well, that if anybody's like fallen from three times their height or higher, you're not going to want to touch them. You're going to want to get that longboard and stabilize their neck and make sure that you very carefully move them to a stabilized state and get them to the hospital as fast as possible.
Yeah, but so like his first thought is like, let's disturb the spinal column, and let me just get my arms around this girl. That's what'll help. And then he just sits with her. It's like, I'm just touching this girl. Like, she got hurt, and now I can touch her.
You know, he doesn't know better.
Yeah, but it's just I don't know. You know, obviously, here's the thing. You might find out if you continue the series that anime can be problematic. And I'm not going to, you know, be like, what? But it was like when I was watching, I was like, what are you doing, bro? Like, you're not helping the situation like at all. But, you know, then he decides to get in the robot. Then we learned that the pilot plugs, which are basically the cockpits, they fill with LCL, which is this weird yellow fluid. They don't explain what it means.
Love that.
And yeah, it's like the abyss where you can breathe in it and stuff. And it looks really cool. And then they talk about synchronizing brainwaves. So like, he's synchronizing brainwaves with something that presumably then has brainwaves. And then as they disconnect it, they disconnect what they call the umbilical bridge, which again, this is all just amazing world building, you know.
Have you seen Pacific Rim?
Yeah.
I saw that like way before seeing any anime, and I'm like, you know, they've got that whole, it's a very similar idea of like the pilot has to like sync with, I think, like a co-pilot in that one, and it's this whole thing.
They call it drifting or something.
Yeah, drifting. And so I felt like I immediately understood what was happening in this because I had had like enough immersion in mech stories and stuff that clearly has been inspired by even this specific thing.
Mecha anime specifically almost all speaks back to EVA on some level. So Pacific Rim definitely, Gurren Lagann does. One of my favorites, Eureka 7 does. It would be cool to cover Eureka 7 sometime. Eureka 7 almost feels like an intentional response or like an adaptation or something of Evangelion. It's like it's very, very inspired by it.
That's cool.
Yeah, but I don't know. So that's basically this episode, right? Is like he's gonna go out and fight the angel. Is there anything?
Am I the only
Yeah,
I know this probably like flags me as the weirdo, but when I first started watching, like when he was in the little pod that was going into the robot, and then it filled with fluid, and all this, thinking this is all some kind of like thinly veiled sexual metaphor, you know, because it was sort of a phallically shaped tube going into this hole and then fluids and all this, but then as it progressed it seemed more almost like returning to the womb than it did anything dirty. Like at first I was like, okay, this is gonna get dirty real quick, okay, this is weird, and then I was like, okay, actually this is sort of sweet and almost like maternal feeling, but then immediately flashing with the fighting right afterwards that, so it was like this weird contrast that I thought was from one way went somewhere else that I think was maybe a little bit more innocent, but still there's not enough yet to know about. And then it really quickly turns.
Yeah.
What is puberty if not becoming a giant mech that has to save the world?
I think that's what it is. Returning to the womb in the truest sense.
Yeah.
It's discovering your capacity to destroy the world as well as yourself and being like, well, I just wanted to go to school, actually.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it until you said that, Kevin, but I feel like it's a metaphor for puberty, maybe, in that moment.
Well, I think there's a lot of sexual and anatomical themes. I think, you know, I think it's kind of psychological, and I think, like, gender stuff and parental stuff is, like, a big part of it. You know, like, you got the father-son thing. I think, yeah, the insertion of the pilot plug reads is very phallic or kind of insemination-based, maybe. And then the thing filling up with fluid is very much a womb. Like, he has returned to the womb. And, you know, he's like a fetus in there. So, yeah, I don't know necessarily, you know, I haven't thought too much about that analysis, so I don't know, but I think image wise I think those fit very well. I mean, Eva like kind of like relates to Eve a little bit, so it's like maybe if it's an artificial human Eva or something that can like relate to humanity in general. But yeah, so any final thoughts, takeaways? I mean, it's an amazing, the thing about this, it's an amazing season of anime, and it's amazing first episode of an anime. It's an amazing pilot for a conceptual show of anything, you know. It's awesome structure. It's good characters that are simple, but I don't know, whatever. You guys got any final thoughts before we move on?
Something that I thought was interesting when watching it was it goes like, oh, it's the end of episode one and it starts auto-playing episode two because it's on Netflix, and I was like, that was a whole 22 minutes. Like, it didn't feel like 22 minutes. And I think it's because the story structure was that of like half of an episode, because he's like about to go out at the end of it, but it still felt fast. Like, it felt like it was just like 10 or 15 minutes and not a full 22. And I was like, oh wow, they somehow managed to fill an entire episode of setup, and now we're going to go in the next episode forward.
Yeah,
it felt very like information dense, but it didn't take the story very far.
Right.
Yeah,
it was a lot of clever exposition that wasn't just thrown in your face.
Mm-hmm. An interesting part, and I don't remember. I don't think this started as a manga. I'm pretty sure it didn't, but I can't remember. But like a thing that happens for a lot of anime that you'll notice is they kind of are based on their manga structure, and the manga structure is about selling chapters of comics. Be all like, hey, watch the next one, check out the next one, get the next one, and so they set up this very small like cliffhanger payoff kind of structure, and I think like regardless of the fact that I don't think it was a manga, I think like this is like a classic first manga structure, is you would like have crazy shit happening but set something up so obvious that a lot of things you do like, oh, just do that in the first episode, is like, no, set it up in the first episode and do it in the second or whatever, you know. And so again, I think that's kind of,
yeah, you know, a lot of anime like takes its time with the procedure of things in that way. Like in Attack on Titan, they'll really do these arcs and they'll be telling you for like three episodes that a big battle is going to happen, and it's all just setting the pieces in place and all the different parts of it, and then you have like two to three episodes of the battle and it's like you can't believe what they're paying off, and it's just like cooler than any other story structure.
Yeah, that's the thing, that's what's so good about anime. And then you go to talk to people about television and they don't know anime, and
they don't even know about
well, you can only do a show if there's like you make a bad cake of some sort, and it's,
yeah,
like,
how is that like Dr. House?
Yeah, exactly. It's like it doesn't have to be.
I wanted to say two other things about the world building and stuff. One thing that anime does that I think that more shows should do is they have the innovation of putting like loading screen tips in between in their commercial breaks. Where sometimes it'll like, as it goes to commercial, like Attack on Titan will like tell you a detail about the backpacks that they use to shoot around the world or something, about like what, how they're built and engineered and all this like world building detail that isn't necessary to appreciate the story, but does kind of give you this better understanding of like, wow, they really thought about every detail of this. And I just think it's a nice way to fill in details that you otherwise wouldn't put in the show, but you do, but you're putting the effect of them in the show, you just don't explain them.
Yeah, and I've seen other anime that does the same thing. Of course, the first anime to chew this idea was Pokemon with the Who's That Pokemon.
Oh yeah,
I was just gonna say that was so genius because it made kids like fight over who was better at knowing obscure Pokemon, which just made them get more obsessed with it. And yeah, that was the first thing that came to my mind when I saw that too, was like, okay, this is where Pokemon must have got the idea from, because this is, you know,
that's awesome.
This is very on the nose.
I do think it's a great idea. The other thing I wanted to say was that this city that they're defending is called Tokyo 3.
Mm-hmm.
And it just got me thinking about how we should have called New York, York 2. and instead of New Hampshire, it should have been Hampshire 2.
Yeah, Hampshire 2.
You know? England 2.
England 2.
With a squared symbol, though. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I think instead of like North and South Dakota, it should just be Dakota and Dakota 2.
That's what I'm saying.
I think that could be real good.
Tokyo 3, that's an innovation.
It's really good. It's also, it's evocative, especially when you go like, oh, then there was a second impact, was Tokyo 2. But I don't know. But the thing is like, the second impact was, well, no, the second impact wasn't Tokyo. Ugh. I can't remember. Who fucking cares? I was
going to say,
yeah, it's hard to know things but not know them, you know? But the end of the episode, the end song of this anime, and I don't know what version you got, Kevin, but the original anime ending song was Fly Me to the Moon. It's kind of this jazz kind of club version. So, Kevin, yeah, you got that version.
I got that one.
Yeah, but I watched it on Netflix, and it's not. It's just something else. It's so I figured I'd mention that because it's a good rendition of Fly Me to the Moon. But Netflix bastards, they changed it and they changed the opening sequence. Whatever. But I think we have time to talk about episode 2 at least, huh? Episode 2 is like the big fight. He gets up and immediately takes a step and it's like, oh shit, he's never been trained before and he could do this. Oh man, I don't think we talked, like, the reason he can pilot the thing is because like the Eva saves him, right? That was important. We should have talked about that. Jesus Christ.
But yeah, it, like, puts the hand over him and saves his life when the falling beams.
Right. So I feel like they talk about this a little bit in terms of like pilot compatibility. And that's like something like, so like there's a problem with compatibility with Unit One. And then Shinji. Oh, another thing I was going to mention is that Shinji doesn't necessarily, and this is probably just my reading of it, but Shinji doesn't necessarily seem like he's convinced he can't drive the robot, but Masato kind of doubts him. Masato's kind of like, are you really going to make it? Do you really think he can do this? And then he's like, wait, I can't do this. And I don't know if that's like just me reading into it or that's like how he read it. But again, if you're thinking about this like puberty sexual thing where there's an older woman that he thought he was going to, you know, be with on some level. And now she's taking him to this thing. And he's like, wait, just, this is a bait and switch. You got this hot lady to bring me to my dad. And my dad wants me to get in a robot. And then the lady's like, he can't drive a robot. And now she doesn't even think I could drive a robot. Jesus Christ, I must be a piece of shit. You know, and so I don't know if that's actually what they intended. But that's kind of like a reading I took, because he doesn't necessarily seem like, oh, I cannot pilot the robot until she says that. And that just might be a timing thing. But anyway, so he's not going to drive it until like they get attacked and a bunch of earthquake happens, a bunch of beams fall. And that's what knocks Ray over. But the Eva moves without anyone piloting it, and it saves Shinji, which is crazy because it's a robot, or it's not a robot, it's an artificial human. But it's weird that it's moving without a pilot, because what the fuck's going on? But yeah, so then that convinces them, oh, there must be some special connection. He must be really compatible and he must be the perfect pilot. And so, yeah. So then in episode two, when he takes the first step, you feel, oh shit, is Shinji actually really good at driving a robot? And then he immediately falls on his face and you're like, oh no, he's just a kid. Holy shit, he's just a kid. There's a kid in a giant robot. He's gonna die. And he's the only one that realizes. Me, the audience earlier, I was not thinking about this. I was thinking a cool robot. A kid's gonna jump in a robot and kick ass. But he's like, no, I'm gonna die. And you see, oh, he is going to die. I don't know. How did you guys feel when in just in those opening moments? Because I was like, oh, this is so huge to me. And then the angel attacks immediately. Anyway.
Well, I feel like it would be playing like a really hard video game, like Armored Core would probably be the best example, but also like an Elden Ring or something like that. But it's like, you're about to go out into this, and if you die, you die. Mm-hmm. So, and it's like a game built for you to die. That's what it reminded me of. Like,
yeah.
If I were to be going into like a video game, and usually when I'm doing that, I'm like, well, let me die a few times just to see what happens, and then I can know what to do. But that's not how he can do it.
Yeah. No, it's a lot like that, except you only have one life and you're like, oh no, and you don't have any healing potions or anything, and you're just like, oh wow, am I gonna die in the first fight? And the audience is kind of like that. It's like, man, he's losing.
If your arm gets chopped, you're gonna feel every bit of pain that entails. Yeah.
So, well, that's the thing, is like the angel, it grabs his head and it grabs his arm, it starts ripping his arm off. And one of the early like trippy kind of edgelordy kind of things that we see in the anime probably is at this point, which is you cut to the thing, the cockpit, and he's grabbing his own arm. I don't know, again, if you guys caught that, but where the angel is grabbing his arm, now he's grabbing his own arm. It's like, well, wait, what does that even mean? I don't know that it necessarily means anything. It probably relates to the fact that there's like brain stuff related to the piloting, you know, so it's like psychological, but I don't know. I was like, wait, what the fuck does that even mean? Like, because how is that arm gonna then pilot the robot? You know, like, well, this is a bad interface system.
I figured he was just holding his arm that was in pain, and that it was like his right arm was like free from the robot for a second, and he was just like, oh my god, I feel that, like, oh
yeah, that makes sense. He's just kind of looking in horror. Yeah, I thought, to me, like that his face made it look like he was doing it to himself, and that was the horror. But yeah, I what you said makes more sense. That's probably what it is. But they mentioned that he's not raising his AT field, which they haven't explained that. And it's like, well, yeah, you did. Why would he know to do that? But
a tutorial pops up on his HUD. Here's how you use the AT screen.
Man, that's what modern anime does. That there's this anime that I'm watching right now called That Time I Was Reincarnated as a Slime. And one of his powers is basically a video game like tutorial voice that explains stuff, and it's really good. It's like in the way it's used in the anime is just really fun, but he's like always asking it questions, and yeah, I don't know, it's really good. But that's another thing that's great about anime. But in this anime, no such luck. He was not explained that. And so his arm gets exploded, and his head gets fucking impaled. He gets like a giant like hole in his head.
Do you see that in the battle? Because the way I remembered seeing it was that there was a sudden cut and the battle was over. And I was like, what happened? In a kind of a good way. And then later on, I felt like it explained he took one directly to the head, and there was like a real headshot that he was dealing with, which makes sense that it, like when it reveals later in the episode, he wouldn't be remembering anything from that moment forward. And then everything after that is like he went into this fugue state, or the thing took over, whatever right. it was.
Well, that's what happens. Yeah. But it's like the angel, it has like one of its powers is it has like in its elbow, it has like a pile driver that it can shoot through its palm. And so it has its head, his head at some point, and it's pile driving his head. And then on one of those shots, I think that's where it goes black.
Okay,
so
okay.
I don't think you see it necessarily punch all the way through the head, but it's hitting so hard. It's like, I mean, your thought is like, Jesus Christ, how is that not impaled the thing's head? Because it is very powerful and it's not exploding him. And then it just cuts to he wakes up and he's in the hospital, and then it cuts and you see the Eva's head, its helmet, its head is being like lifted up in a crane, and it's like, oh, the shit's head got taken off, which also is kind of like, oh, its head's gone and he's alive, so I guess it's like it didn't rip his head off. So that's another bit of like visual storytelling. It kind of is explaining to you.
Well, I love at one point they pop in his ear and they're like, it's okay, you're only feeling the pain. And it's like, I know.
Yeah, that's the problem.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And then you cut to Gendo, who's in like, he's in this like, it's a Zoom meeting. It's like a VR Zoom meeting that looks like a Simon game. You know, it has like these red and blue and green and yellow panels. And these scenes happen a lot in the show, I think. And I just love them because they always use the same animation. They're the same frames and stuff. It's the same faces. And their faces are almost always super smug, no matter what they're saying. So it's just these smug guys that are just like glowing in these different colors. And they're just like, they're always like, ha ha ha, we control the world. Don't you understand, Gendo? And he's like, I'm doing my job. And they're like, sure you are, but don't you understand that we control the world and we're watching you? And he's like, I know, I got to get to work. And basically, they kind of seed kind of world building ideas, but basically every scene that they're in is like that. They're like, don't you know that we're smug and in charge? And he's like, I know, and I got work to do. And they're like, we're going to cut your funding. And he's like, you need me. And they're like, yeah, that's right, keep up the good work. And it's like, what the fuck is happening? But I just really love those scenes. They talk about the Human Instrumentality Project, and they say it's humanity's last hope and that there's no turning back now. I don't know, that none of that shit made any sense, right? It doesn't really like make any, it probably sets stuff up, but it's not like you're supposed to really like understand anything other than that like Gendo's in charge, but you already knew he was in charge, you know.
It seemed weird for them to be like threatening him when it sounded like also he was the only choice they had. You know, it's not like they were like, well, there's this other team here that's got better robots than yours, or the Air Force has developed this new bomb or something. You know, it just seemed all like a whole bunch of empty threats.
Yeah, in they definitely like they expand on that more later in the season, but it definitely never gets explained well, because there's this tension of like the government or whatever that body is does not trust this Nerve HQ, and they wish they can control them better, but it's obvious that they're the only hope and there's no other options, and there's nothing that they're obviously doing that would like create a reason for them to mistrust him. So it's like, well, why are you being dicks? Like, you're acting like we're wasting money. All of your weaponry doesn't work. These are the only weapons that work. So what is wasting money? You know, which is kind of Gendo's argument anyway. So, But yeah, I don't know. I kind of like that. And I think that's maybe, you know, we don't have a lot of like cultural context, but that might maybe be like references to stuff in the war too, you know, is the idea about war rationing and, you know, stuff like that. That might be like tapping into those tropes. I don't know. Miyazaki movies do that sometimes. And then people are like, this was like a direct reference to Mitsubishi's war production or something, you know, I don't know.
Something but, I remember reading about, I think in relation to the movie Battle Royale, which was around the year 2000, is like a whole generation of Japanese were like incredibly angry at their parents for basically World War II. And there were a lot of kids that wound up working in munitions factories in those days and being forced to, you know, create weapons of war and be a part of the war effort. And it scarred them, especially considering how it ended for the country. That the anger towards the parents, which I feel like you see in so many different things, like in Persona. But it's also, I don't know what is a bubble that I'm in, because I'm only seeing the stuff that's coming to me through JRPGs and anime. And so
sure.
I have no actual sight on the culture, but it really feels like the anger over what happened in World War II is, it affected our country to this day.
No, but I think there's definitely an argument that like maybe Shinji's pacifism or something is like it's an unwillingness to like join like a governmental war machine or something. Like right. I definitely see that reading. And you know, interpretations like this are interesting even if they're not necessarily the intent. But I that's what's cool about art in general. And I think like anime is such a rich text for stuff like that anyway. And it's like it's so much more dense than a lot of like Western stuff, so it's more interesting to muse about that stuff, you know. But who knows, but I could definitely see it. One thing I wanted to say is that like after the Zoom call, like you see Masato and Ritsuko, who's the scientist, they're talking about Shinji's like brain, and they're saying like, oh, he has cranial nerve strain, but he doesn't have psychological contamination. While they're talking, like Shinji's in the hospital, like staring at his arm, horrified, you know, like clearly traumatized. And it's just interesting. I think like that conversation that they have is like one of the early conversations. Also the Zoom call is like, it's this anime shit where it's static. So they're saving money on animation and they're having long philosophical discussions about stuff. And I think they're like, oh, I think Shinji's the kind of person who doesn't connect to others. Have you heard about the hedgehog theory? You know, and they just, and I just love that anime does that. And it's just, it's fun. But so that's like a moment where that happens. And then Masato's like, okay, so Shinji's going to go live with me because he can't live with his dad for whatever reason, which is more, you know, there's clearly strain between him and his dad. And it also is more evidence in the like what is going on between them, because Ritsuko like Ritsuko jokes that like he's her boyfriend later, and I think she jokes to Ritsuko earlier, like she's like, don't worry, I'm not gonna like mess around with him, which like she's initiate, like she's the person that like projects that into the world.
It's like, know? Nobody brought that up.
Right. It's like, so you made it weird, you know? And so again, I think if you are trying to read this on like, what is the puberty, like romance, sexual story? Like, I think like that is something like we're meant to be tracking on some level. But who knows? But so yeah, we get to our apartment and it's full of trash and it's even more full of beer cans. And yeah, so she's like a shitty alcoholic, and man, they introduce, this is another anime trope, you guys. Just like the random penguin, just like a random, like intelligent, cute creature. Pen shows up. And
it's so great the way it's like, oh, don't wake the sleeper in the fridge. It's like, you think that she's got some weird roommate, but then you find out like, no, he needs the fridge.
Well, yeah. So Shinji's like, what's in this icebox or whatever? What's in this cooler or something like that? And Shinji's like, don't go in there. I would hate to wake someone up when they're sleeping. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? That's an icebox, you know? And then it's a thing.
It was a great reveal.
Yeah. But then that's also like, I talked about watching Tenchi Muyo, and in Tenchi Muyo, there's this cat. Like it's like this rabbit cat kind of thing, and it turns into a fucking spaceship. And so like that's like an awesome anime trope. And I don't know what the actual, I'm definitely curious like what the original progenitor of that trope is. But yeah, it's a fun trope. Let's see. Oh,
I was going to say one thing that the show does really well is like it's doing stuff on such a giant scale that it does take moments to like make it small again. And I think that that's what like the arm getting ripped. You see him dealing with like what would it feel like to have your arm ripped off, getting into, I think it's a little bit in the third episode he's like out fighting, and then he sees two friends of his who have like escaped the safe area and they're in danger. And it's like, that's what spurs him to like be good in the mech again, is like this kind of personal moment that gets, you know, in a story that's like so massive in scale and scope, it like remembers to make each moment personal and visceral.
Yeah, and I think the pacing can sometimes be jarring to people, but that's another thing I really like about anime, is sometimes they go like, we're going to take a huge interlude for a while, and it's like, hey, you know, again, that's confidence, you know. Let's see. Okay, so like at some point they do like the Austin Powers bit where Shinji is, when he meets Pen Pen, where Shinji is naked and he bursts out and there's like a can covering his dick.
That was so funny, because she removes a can and it's just a smaller thing that's still covering his dick behind it.
It's so good. They do that joke too. It's not just the can joke. It's the removing the can and there's an even smaller thing covering it still joke. It was
made
so
me
good.
Laugh so hard. Legitimate. Yeah.
Which, and I don't know if this was just my subtitles or if this was in every version of it, but the little jar said toothpicks on it too in Japanese, which I thought was an added little, almost like an insulting joke there.
That's
yeah,
great.
Definitely. Those That's are great. So Kevin has like fan translations and stuff, and those often have translation notes that are a lot like add a lot of context and are really awesome a lot of times. So fan translations can be really good, but you usually don't find those. I think if we keep doing this anime, most of the stuff we'll cover will be like Crunchyroll anime and stuff, so you won't get most of that, but I do recommend those translations if you can ever find them. I think they're really helpful for learning about anime. But so I don't know what this note relates to, but at some point like Misato talks about how she only, I think she like is talking about how she's like, oh, I was laying it on too thick, where she's like talking to herself about maybe she was being too fake friendly. But then she says like, oh, I was seeing, I'm just seeing Shinji as a means to an end. But she's not like critiquing herself. She's like reminding herself, remember, you're only seeing Shinji as a means to an end, which is like something Shinji has been insecure about. And when he's like having negative thoughts, he's like, no one cares about me. They just want me to pilot robots and they're just being nice to me because they want something out of me. And like, this reveals that he's right. Like, clearly Gendo just wants him to pilot the robot to save the world. Doesn't give a shit about him. And now Misato has just revealed, I also do not care about this kid. I am being nice to him for a reason. And presumably the reason is so he'll pilot the robot to save the world, but that's not made clear. And I don't actually know if that's the reason, but yeah. And so then at this point, Shinji remembers getting myrtleized and, you know, we have the flashback to the fight and man, this is, I think, the point where you're like, oh, this is like a crazy anime, you know. What'd you guys think about this sequence?
I loved it. Like, it was just the way that the blood spews out of both sides of his head in that moment, and then seeing the automaton element take over, it's just like, this is really cool animation, way cooler than you're gonna see on almost any American cartoon. You're not going to see it on Family Guy.
Yeah, or even modern anime. Like, they just don't do the hand-drawn stuff like this anymore. It looked really amazing. So like the robot, its mouth opens, and you know, a lot of mecha has like stylized humanoid elements, but so you see the mouth and you're not necessarily thinking much of it, but then when it like bursts open and it has like blood red teeth, you're like, Jesus fucking Christ, what the fuck's going on, you know? And it has like its mouth opens and it starts attacking. It get like they call out in the narration like, oh, it has an AT field or whatever, or like the angel develops an AT field, and so the Eva like heals its arm and apparently is capable of self-healing, which is weird if it's a robot, and it's not a robot because it's an artificial human or some shit. So it starts ripping open the AT field, which is another great sequence, just like it actually ripping apart this energy field, which just like, that would be so fucking hard to do today, and they were doing it back then by hand. It's just like, it would have been so impossible to make that effect. It looks so fucking good.
They use colors so well too.
Yeah, contrast, like they're high contrast and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like, again, confidence, you know, it's like they don't, I don't know. It's also style, like flair and fashion.
There's a huge amount of style in there because, yeah, like the way in the control center, you don't really know exactly what's a screen and what they're looking at and what they're not, but you get exactly what it is, even so.
Yeah.
It's like a non-real space, but it totally works.
Yeah, it kind of adds this kind of dreamy quality to everything. So the Ava, it rips off a spike off of the angel. It's like keeps stabbing it into the core, which is like this crystal ball, and it eventually snaps breaks the core. And before the Ava dies, it like kind of like judos on top of the Ava and like self-destructs. And you see that the self-destruction, it explodes the Eva's helmet and causes the helmet to fall off, the helmet that we saw get picked up that looked like a head. And it's revealed, oh, the head didn't get blown off. The helmet got blown off and knocked to the ground, revealing this much more alien, organic kind of skull sort of face sort of thing. And I'm pretty sure, yeah, that's like the end of the sequence, is like he's in this mirrored space, so he could see a mirror and he could see the skull of the Eva in the mirror, and the empty skull kind of bubbles up and flesh bubbles up out of it, and like an eyeball appears in the skull socket and it makes eye contact with him, and I think he starts screaming, right? He starts screaming, and like,
yeah, I was like, black. What the fuck is going on?
Yeah, and that's like, oh holy shit, which is interesting because, is it at the beginning of this episode? At the beginning of this episode, Shinji is in the hospital. The Eva's head is off. And his dad comes down an elevator, and Shinji's standing right in front of the elevator. He can't make eye contact with his dad, and his dad just glares at him. The elevator closes, and his dad keeps going down the elevator. And so you watch this, and it's like, oh man, Shinji fucked up. His dad has pissed at him. He's ashamed of himself. He couldn't do anything. But then it's like, no, wait, he won. Like, Shinji didn't know it, presumably because he was too traumatized to have remembered it until the flashback. So he doesn't know. He thinks he's lost when he's doing that with his dad, but his dad is doing that knowing he won. So his dad is either pissed at him at the damage he did, or at how bad he piloted it, or this is his dad being proud, you know, which all of these possibilities are fucking insane, you know, no matter how you explode it, you know. But yeah, I don't know. I thought it was like, man, the idea that he experienced, oh, my dad's ashamed of me, I killed the robot and failed the city, and he didn't, and no one disabused him of that notion until like Misato, I think, takes him to, you know, Tokyo 3 and says, this is Tokyo 3. And she doesn't even say, you fucking did it, bro. She says, this is Tokyo 3. This is a city you saved. Like, you have to put together that's what she was saying. Like, actually, you won this fight, bro. You know, like, you didn't just survive. And again, you know, this is a character who's very isolated and lonely, and people are very reserved with praise and stuff, other than Misato, who seemingly admits to lying about it to manipulate him. And so that's episode two. Do you guys have any last minute thoughts about episode two?
I love how Kevin, go. Sorry.
Yeah, go.
So
go
just ahead, surprised at his lack of reaction to realizing that he did save the city. So I was confused about that too, because I was like, wait, he's not reacting to that at all. Did he know that already at that point? Like, then that made the whole exchange with his dad make less sense. But then I kind of like realized, I think he just doesn't react to hardly anything. You know, he's very reserved. He just sort of goes along with whatever people tell him what to do so far. So maybe that does fit.
That's true too. He probably wouldn't have reacted anyway, but my audience belief was that he didn't know until he kind of had that flashback, but it's unclear. I think he wouldn't have reacted if he saved the world. And also, I think he would have only reacted if other people made a big deal out of it. And clearly no one did. So yeah, like maybe even if he did know, he was like, man, this sucks. I saved the world and no one even cares. Like, so that's an also a completely valid reason. Anyway, anything else, or should we move on to Jeff?
No, go for it.
Okay.
I just love how quickly we went from he feels his arm getting ripped off to he experiences getting his head blown off. Mm-hmm. Like, I know it didn't actually happen, but it seemed like he experienced death in a way, and then woke up in the hospital and was like, did I do okay? And he's gonna, it says to me that he's gonna be going through maybe the craziest possible things that a human being could ever even dream of somebody going through by the end of this show. If like by the end of episode two, he's knows what it feels like to have your head blown off.
Yeah.
Where's it going from here?
Yeah, because, you know, and I think it's interesting because I think when his arm gets broken, you go like, oh, he's holding his arm. Is his arm really broken? And then so when he gets his head stabbed, you're like, oh, he's dead. And then he wakes up and you're like, oh, he's not dead. I wonder how bad the damage is on him. And then seems like his body's
fine. He only feels it, you know, and so it's like.
But then they talk about psychological contamination and it's like, oh, so the only damage that's been dealt is psychological damage. Yeah. That's all that's happened, you know, which is just really interesting. And I think, you know, it's an interesting choice. It's I don't know. I think there's, if you think about it, there's like, you know, if we talk about the insemination in the womb, you go womb to death to waking up in the hospital, you know, which is maybe a little bit like rebirth or something. That's maybe getting it to, you know, jerk off. But, you know, but it's, I think there is a lot of these like cyclical repetitions, and waking up in a hospital is like one of them. And so I think you do see a lot of like cyclical kind of stuff, but yeah, I don't know. That was the first two episodes of Eva. I think it's really good. I'd love to keep going through. I don't know. Let me know what you think. Let me know if you want me to keep doing this or not. The thing that makes the most sense is probably trying to do this as a Patreon series, but I don't know. Who knows? Just let me know. Any last minute thoughts? We're almost out of time, except the timer's not, you know, it's fine. Before we say goodbye and tell you to plug stuff.
Anime kicks ass.
Yeah, I'd like to think about it more. So check out No One Can Know About This, as well as at NOCKAT on Twitter.
I think it's an NOCKAT podcast on Twitter.
Nope, I got it. I'm pretty sure I'm the one that is right about this, not you. NOCKAT podcast on Twitter. But Jeff, you do a good version of plugging.
Go look for it in your podcast player. No One Can Know About This. It's a podcast where we play every Final Fantasy. Spencer is going to be a guest on a run of episodes coming up, and it's going to detail our Thanksgiving from 2022. It's going to be awesome.
It's a really unique podcast. I think you'll enjoy the journey. As for me, you know, who cares? Kevin, we're pretty low on time, so do you just want to plug and take us out?
Yeah, so join Spencer's Patreon at patreon.com/thesixler, get your name in the ending credits, or watch us on schraubhomevideo.com every Sunday, or download videos at thathappenspod.com, or you can also watch our videos on Spotify and the Spotify app.
All right. Spencer? Thank you so much. That's our show. Goodbye.
Thanks for having me.